James Brown, "You Don't Work, You Can't Eat." Very fitting as we're going to be talking about working right now. According to a recent report from the National Employment Law Project, lower wage jobs are the fastest growing, thus making the good jobs deficit even deeper than it was at the start of the 21st century. The report indicates the unbalanced recession and recovery, meaning the long-term rise in inequality in the U.S. continues. Tomorrow is May Day. A march is planned in downtown Seattle tomorrow. And on Thursday, May the 2nd, Working Washington hosts a poverty wage story slam. Now, we're going to tell you a little bit more about that coming up here. We have some of those participating in Tuesday's event here in the studio with me today. So we're going to get a jump on some of those stories that they'll be sharing. Spencer is an airport worker who loads and unloads baggage for Alaska Airlines passengers at SeaTac Airport. Welcome to the show, Spencer.
Hey, everyone.
And Arturo is a Mexican immigrant who has worked 5 years at a fast food chain in North Seattle and is paid less than $10 an hour. Is that about right? Okay. Yes. Arturo, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Hi.
And also on the phone with us is Director, I'm going to make sure I get her title correct, Director of Washington State Labor and Education Research Center at South Seattle Community College, Sarah Laslett, joins us by phone. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Happy to do it.
So, Sarah, Spencer, I'm actually going to start with you first. So I understand you're getting married soon, and you're worried about planning for the future with your current wage. Talk a little bit about your situation.
Well, there's a lot of things that go into it, right? Because, you know, you got money. You have to work on, like, making enough that you have enough to eat. But I'm getting married, and my wife has a few different medical issues, which make it so she can't work. Mm-hmm. But also that I'm going to have to pay for those medical issues as soon as we get married, because she's going to be off her mother's insurance, so all that's going to go on me. So I don't need to worry about paying all those different medical bills for those things and worry about making sure that we both have enough to eat and somewhere to sleep and stay.
And talk about how stressful that is. I mean, you know, I don't want to assume here, but I mean, I would imagine I'm getting married too. So hi, other person getting married in the room. I'm getting married, and I know that even just the stress of planning the wedding and the finances that go into that have stressed me out, let alone thinking about the fact that now my income is contributing to a two-income household, and you're just in a one-income household. So talk about, I guess, the level of stress or, you know, what you're thinking in terms of how do I plan my future financially?
Well, it's a new feeling for me because growing up, I was a really relaxed guy. I never really had to worry about much stuff, just kind of floated through. And now it's all hitting me pretty hard that I'm going to have to worry about all this. And my fiance is doing a great job. She's really helping. Like, she's put a bunch of the stuff besides monetary on her back to try and help me out with that. I really appreciate that, but it is still stressful thinking about how we're even going to make it through a month, how much overtime I'm going to have to do just to be able to provide for both of us.
And if you can answer this, what's your hourly wage?
I get paid $12 an hour, or I think $12.25 now after the 25-cent raise.
And do you work a full 40-hour week?
I do work a full 40-hour week.
But that's obviously not enough to support a family, you and your wife.
Yeah, that's correct.
So what are you hoping, you know, because I know that there is a campaign going on with the SeaTac workers to try to move forward the wage. So why are you participating and what are you hoping to gain?
Well, when it first started out, this is just some people who are just upset about stuff. But as I stayed there longer and longer and saw the campaign and everything, I realized more that the only way to get stuff done was to try and get management to listen to us, and they weren't. And this going through becoming a union makes them have to listen to us and demand that they recognize our rights as fellow human beings to them. And through that, we're hoping to just make the place better, whether through higher wages or better benefits like medical and stuff. And through things like that, I feel like that'll take a lot of the pressure off of me and help make it easier for me to plan my life with my new family.
Well, congratulations on getting married. As I again said, I too am getting married, so I know the pressures of that. Arturo, I want to turn to you. Now, you and your wife work in fast food, and you said that still is barely enough to take care of yourselves, let alone your 3-year-old daughter. So talk a little bit about your story.
It's almost similar with this guy. So we work together on the same place for support my child. We have one guy from 12 years old, so she need daycare and dentist program. But we can pay for that program because it's too high, and we try to qualify take this benefit for us, but we can do that because our job is, the wage is too low for us. We're trying to find other jobs, but my wife, she don't speak too much English, and she now is in the school every mornings, so she tried to teach more English for find somewhere else, another place for, I think, she take a little bit more money. So I work 8 hours a day, and every weekends she do Mexican food for sale to friends or to Mexican people, and we try to help us for with this small sale. So we try to support because try to find more money because my rent and my problems for money or is too high, you know. So we paid for $900 a month for the rent, and we need to buy food and things like that for my son, my child, my daughter. So I don't know.
It's difficult.
Difficult.
And you know, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, it's one thing. You're trying to, you know, have a home, you know, and you have a child, and you guys are, you know, obviously partners in this, which is great. But how does it impact your marriage, your family life? Because you said that you work on the weekends a lot. So it would seem like, you know, even just in terms of your family life, the time that you're able to spend maybe is even less because you're working more just to pay the rent and put food on the table.
I try to find other job and other place for work in the nine time, but it's too hard for me because my daughter and my son is alone in the home because we try to qualify for a daycare for my daughter, and my son is young, you know, so he like to see what happened in the street, and I need to stay close to him.
Right, you want to be there to make sure that you can protect him and lead him,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
When you talk about the qualifications for the daycare, what are these qualifications? I mean, I'm wondering, what exactly did you have to qualify for that you weren't able to get this assistance to be able to get daycare for your 3-year-old daughter?
Yeah, so my wife tried to take that benefit, but she tried to on different place, but they say we need to pay a little bit, but that a little bit is more that
the little bit is more than you can afford to pay.
Yes. This is too difficult for us. It's because that when my wife work, I'm stay with my kids. When I work, my wife stay with the kids. So now she start to the school, and she helped me for learn more English, because probably after she find somebody else better, you know. So this is what I'm do now.
Well, thank you, Arturo, for being here and sharing your story. And Sarah, when you hear stories like Spencer's and Arturo's, how does this compare to the labor research and the numbers out there that, you know, I kind of talked about a little bit at the top of the show?
Well, those stories are unfortunately all too common. People who work many, many hours, often working multiple jobs. And despite the fact that Washington State has the highest, I think it's the highest minimum wage in the country, that minimum wage is still a poverty wage. These guys sound like they're actually earning a little bit more than minimum wage. And yet that still is completely inadequate to making a living and being able to support a family. Certainly in the Seattle urban area, which is an expensive place to live. And the idea of a minimum wage is nothing near a living wage. The idea that we actually have to be able to afford all the basic necessities, housing, food, transportation, not to mention healthcare, and of course that is the really big issue, is people who do not have employer-provided health insurance cannot afford to go to the doctor. And if something really goes wrong, if somebody gets a serious illness or if they get injured, the medical bills that arise from that can be devastating to a family's economy for a very, very long time. So, you know, these stories are all too common. And one of the other aspects of low-wage work is that people get stuck in it. It used to be that if you got, you know, a job where you were making minimum wage or a little bit more than minimum wage, that was considered a, kind of a first step. And then there were stepping stones and you would move up. And that's becoming less and less possible. And so people really are getting stuck in this low-wage work at every stage of their lives. So their access to economic advancement through their own efforts is very limited. If they then try and go to school to get increased certification so they can get better jobs, that's also extremely difficult because of tuition rates and you know, very limited ability to get tuition assistance. So it's really a vicious cycle.
And if you're just joining the show, we're talking about labor and work and income inequality. Talking right now to Director of Washington State Labor and Education Research Center at South Seattle Community College, Sarah Laslett. Sarah, you know, I mentioned at the top of the start of this interview that minimum wage jobs are growing rapidly. Why have we seen such growth, especially during this recession? And then now we're on the upswing, but that's kind of been the trend, right? The mid-level income jobs, they dropped off, but then the low-income jobs increased.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a complicated question, and you really have to look at it by industry. So, for instance, the fastest-growing job in Washington State is home health providers. So these are folks that go in and they help the elderly, the disabled, in their homes so that they can stay in their homes and get the care that they need. This is an extremely high-demand job, and it's growing very, very quickly. And it's a very low-wage job, although it is the case that home care workers in Washington State, many of them have been able to unionize, and they have been able to get some increased wages and some increased benefits and some increased training opportunities through their unionization efforts. Nevertheless, this remains an extremely low-wage job. Now, why is this job so high demand? Well, we already know that with the retirement of the baby boomers and the aging population, the need for this kind of assistance is growing now and will continue to grow for quite a while to come. We also know that people prefer to stay in their homes when they need care rather than go into a facility, but it's also the case that access to facilities is extremely limited. So in that particular case, the growth in that job is being affected by demographics. It's also being affected by the way in which the economy has changed around that kind of work and that kind of care. So that's one example of a specific piece of the economy. But you also have to contrast things, for instance, like retail work. So this is another area that's growing massively and is usually very low-wage work and very low rates of unionization within those industries. So you really have to compare that to something like manufacturing work. So, for instance, if you go and work for Boeing as a machinist, and again, because of unionization, you know, those are really family wage jobs with good benefits and very coveted jobs, high-skill jobs often as well that you have to get significant training for. But we see right now with Boeing, you know, they're going through a layoff cycle, both for machinists and for the engineers that they employ. This is kind of a normal business cycle for them, and there's also questions about whether or not, in fact, the company is looking to move more work out of Washington State. But those kinds of jobs are coveted and they're prized, and there are not that many of them. So it's not just that the low-wage jobs are growing, but that higher-wage jobs, family-wage jobs, are not growing. Or if they grow, they grow and then they shrink through the course of the business cycle.
Well, you brought up something that made me kind of want to turn to another aspect of this, which is women in the workforce. You know, both Arturo and his wife have to work, and, you know, by his own account, certainly, you know, struggling to take care of his daughter and son. And then Spencer here, who has a wife who can't work because of medical reasons, and he's, you know, now trying to plan his future and how he's going to take care of her. So, you know, it kind of points to, you know, the women in the workforce question. I mean, how does this impact wages, especially when recent research shows women are already making less than men?
Well, that's right. The gender wage gap has pretty much stalled, and we've just seen research coming out recently that Seattle is one of the worst places in the country in terms of the gender wage gap. So what the gender wage gap is the amount of money that a woman earns on average in comparison to a man. So overall, the gender wage gap is about 80 cents to the dollar. So on average, a woman makes 80 cents to the male dollar. And in the Seattle area, it's lower than that. I believe the research came in at 76 cents to the male dollar.
Yes, it was 76.
Like
yes,
yeah.
It was 76. Mm-hmm.
Right. So one of the things that's happening in terms of the impact of gender in the workforce, women are now entering the workforce at much higher rates than ever before. And there are kinds of work, especially what we call caring labor, things like child care, things like home care, that are kind of deemed women's work. And what kind of explains the gender wage gap these days is really what's called sex-segregated work. So the kinds of jobs that are dominated by women, in other words, this kind of caring labor job, is simply paid less than jobs that are dominated by men. So women enter the workforce in greater numbers, which is, of course, a good thing for women's economic empowerment. It's a good thing for families. But because the kinds of jobs that they enter are lower wage, in fact, they do not get the full value of their labor as they enter the workforce because of the kinds of jobs that are open to women and that women sort of traditionally enter into. So it's really the idea of a sort of a single income family. You know, that's a myth, and it's really kind of always been a myth, although there was this time period in the 1950s when there was the sort of ideal Leave It to Beaver family where dad just worked and mom could stay at home and bake cookies and everything was fine. And that was a myth then and pretty much for everybody, and it's really a myth now. So it is absolutely necessary to have two income families, and for those who can't because of health reasons or other kinds of things, it creates a tremendous economic burden.
Well, I know there are a lot of other factors. Education is also another factor, but I do want to come back to Spencer and Arturo before we close out, and we are kind of running low on time, but just if you can really, you know, in, I don't know, 30 seconds or so, talk about the role of education.
Well, the problem with education these days is that the jobs are demanding more and more education, but in fact, people who go on to get higher degrees are not able to find the jobs that meet their credentials, and so you end up perhaps with a bachelor's degree, unable to find work in the area in which you are trained, and on top of it, with massive quantities of debt. So there's a real disconnect between our training and education system and the job market.
Well, Arturo, I saw you nodding as she was saying that too, so what would you add to that?
We try to do the better job, and we try to go to school, my wife and I, because I need to go to English school too, but my English is not so good, but we try to make better things. Then we try to find more benefit for us, so because for our kids, you know, so it's not for me or for my wife, it's for our kids. That's what I'm trying to make better.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, talk about just a little bit, your participation in the event coming up on Thursday, May the 2nd. Tell people why they should come out and hear the stories from poverty wage workers like yourself. Oh, Spencer. That's a question for you.
Okay. Well, it's we're calling it On the Edge. It's a Poverty Wage Story Slam.
Oh, da-na-da.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's over at Doc Maynard's in Pioneer Square at 6 p.m. Thursday, May 2nd. And it's just going to be people just telling the story of their poverty wage and stuff, you know, letting it more, let other people hear like what's actually going on so they know from actual people and can relate it to faces and see that it's not just numbers and stuff, it's people just like they are who are struggling with these things.
And again, the event is On the Edge, a Poverty Wage Story Slam, and that is Thursday, May the 2nd. It's the first Thursday immediately following May Day, which is tomorrow. Doors will open at 5:45, and the Story Slam starts at 6. Doc Maynard's in Pioneer Square in Seattle is where it will be held. And we'll have some this information on our website at kbcs.fm as well, so you'll be able to access that information. I thank you, Sarah Leslett, for being here on the phone with us to talk about this very important subject. Thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
And as well, Arturo, thank you for coming in. And Spencer, thank you for coming in. Working Washington, we have to say thank you to Working Washington, who helped us coordinate this discussion today, as well as our producer, Yuko Kadama. So you can find more information at our website at kbcs.fm. We will certainly continue to follow this discussion, and, you know, maybe we'll have round two of it coming up sometime soon. This is Music and Ideas, and we're going to take a short music break.